Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey everyone, Kevin Cruz here. Happy Friday. It's Fan Mail Friday on the LeadX Leadership Show, and I just got back from NASA, a very cool trip, which I'll mention, I'll talk a little bit about at the end of the show. Can you imagine making $9,781 per minute? Per minute? Almost $10,000 per minute. That is how much LeBron James is going to make now as an LA Laker. LeBron James is getting paid $154 million for 4 years. That's about $470,000 per game. Imagine you showed up to your office for the day and got paid half a mil. It'd be worth it, right? Anyway, good for LeBron. Of course, being a Sixers fan, most people in Philadelphia was, you know, they actually thought the Sixers had a shot. They wanted LeBron to come to Philadelphia. He shares an agent with Ben Simmons, but the easy money had him going to LA because LeBron James' son is an up-and-coming high school basketball star, you know, basketball player, and there's a great school out there for him. And most people think LeBron James is getting ready to set up his, you know, Hollywood career post-NBA. So anyway, good for him. Hey, in just a minute, I am going to answer some of your questions on how to eliminate bad habits, how to set your price as an entrepreneur or as a consultant. I'm going to talk about some insights into the power of failure, understanding your failures. Like I mentioned, I'll talk a little bit more about my trip to NASA, which was, you know, pretty mind-blowing. But first, I need to remind you, if you like the show, if you think you might like me, the best favor you can do for me is just go onto iTunes and leave a quick rating for the LeadX Leadership Show. It takes, you know, less than a minute to do. I just got an email from someone that goes by Stormy67. I'm guessing 67 is the year Stormy was born because I have some handles with 67 as well. Anyway, Stormy67 said a quick email to say that I left a review following this morning's podcast number 280 with Jeremy Ryan. Some really useful tips concerning the use of LinkedIn. And because Stormy67 left that iTunes review and let us know via email, we sent Stormy67 a link to our private group on Facebook where we're going back and forth on interesting topics. I keep asking questions or advice about different things related to growing the company LeadX. And when people respond, I give away tons of books. We've literally given away dozens and dozens of books this year. I just, like, no cost. I just ship them in the mail kind of thing. So if you want to get part of this group and hang with the cool kids, leave a review on iTunes, send an email to info@leadx.org, and we will invite you into that group. And before I get to the questions, I just want to let everybody know that we're hiring. I'm looking for two senior level people who would be reporting to me, who will be reporting to me. One is a CTO, Chief Technology Officer, or VP of Engineering, kind of a dual role. And the other is a head of marketing. I'm looking for people that have, you know, 5 or 10 years experience in a B2B SaaS startup. Right now, the jobs are posted on AngelList. That's angel.co. By the time this podcast airs, hopefully the same job post will be also up on the LeadX blog. So even if you're not right for it, but you think your friend is a CTO, you think your friend is heading up marketing at a fast growing software company, then let them know. Let them know that LeadX is up and coming, doing cool work, making a difference on the planet, and put me in touch with them. I'd really appreciate that. Also, several episodes ago, I talked about how I created my leadership user's manual, how to create a leader user's manual. And it's like a one pager that reviews, you know, your personality traits, the do's and don'ts, quirks, etc., to help your team members to work with you, especially the newbies, the new hires who don't know anything about you. And I had neglected to post the actual one pager up online. And just this weekend, I finally wrote the article and posted it up on Forbes. So you can get a written version of the step-by-step how to create your leader user's manual. You can see my real one with all of my data. It's kind of a funny thing to put out in the world. And so you could just Google Forbes Cruise, K-R-U-S-E, user's manual, and it will come up as the first link. Or go to Forbes.com and use their search function for leadership user's manual. And again, in about a week, I will duplicate that article onto the blog. So let's dive into some questions. Here are four secrets to replace your bad habits with good habits. So this was a question, an email I got from Robert. Robert wrote to me, "One of my goals is to read all those books I've been putting off. Another goal I have is to spend less time on my phone and electronics in general. Another goal I have is to break bad habits such as sleeping in and going to bed late, among other things. Do you have any advice on breaking bad habits in general?" So Robert, thanks for the question, and you're thinking about it the right way, even if you don't realize it, meaning you've got your goals, your positive things you're trying to do, like read more books, but then you're also mentioning the bad habits, like sleeping in. You know, if you didn't sleep in, maybe you'd have more time to read books, etc., or less time on electronics. Maybe that's more time to read books. So when it comes to habits, the first thing we all need to remember is that the most powerful force for habits, for success, for doing what you want to do, is your environment. It's your environment. Think about literally your physical environment. You know, if I have no potato chips sitting around in my kitchen, my kitchen environment, then I'm not going to eat, you know, potato chips, and I'm going to probably, you know, lose a tenth of a pound that week. If I'm buying junk food, if I'm buying potato chips because my kids are around and they want chips, then I'm relying on my willpower not to grab them, especially when they're eating them, sitting next to me on the couch and we're watching TV. And we all know how that goes. You know, motivation doesn't last very long. Willpower really crumbles in the face of nice, salty, crunchy potato chips. I also like fries. I also like nachos. You can tell these are my weak points. So, you know, part of this is we need to think about, okay, if environment is key to what we do, to our habits, good and bad, what do we do about that? And the idea is you want to introduce friction in your bad habits. You want to make it harder to do your bad habits. And you want to reduce the friction in good habits, make it easier to do your good habits. So that's the first two secrets, add friction and reduce friction. So let's say, you know, adding friction to bad habits. So Robert talks about, you know, he's spending too much time on his phone, too much time on electronics. And, you know, this is a very common problem these days. And indeed, myself, earlier this year, I thought, okay, you know what? Like, even in these 1 minute, 3 minute, 5 minute pockets of time, if I could be reading a book instead of surfing Facebook, they would both be relaxing. They both count for my relaxing, recharging time, but one's also a little more nourishing for my brain than the other. So how did I add friction to my bad social media practices? Well, it was really simple. I just moved all of the icons for Facebook, for Instagram, for Twitter, from my home screen on my iPhone to like six panels back. So I now have to swipe, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to get to them. It's not a lot of friction, and I probably still use them too much. And of course, I justify it by saying, oh, I got to keep in touch with the fans and the listeners and all that. But at least I'm not doing the automatic open up my phone, I see one tap away is the Facebook stream, one tap away is the Twitter feed. Instead, I have to be mindful about it. I have to think like, okay, to get to one of those apps, I got to go find it. And there's just that pause. And sometimes that's all it takes. So I added friction in the way of just moving deeper down into the iPhone menus, my social media apps. Now, how do I reduce friction for the good habits? So if I want to read more, one of the things I did was I moved the Kindle app on my phone onto the first screen, upper left position. So the number one position app is Kindle. So I'm always going to see it. That's a trigger that's capturing my attention, and it's only one tap away. Now, I've done similar things. So Robert, like if you want to really focus on reading and maybe you're not into the Kindle, you can do the same thing with physical books. I like to have, you know, several books going at the same time. And one thing I'll do is I'll put a physical book on my nightstand up by my bed. I'll put another one down on the coffee table. Now, why am I doing that? So when I'm going to bed, if I'm trying to relax, and again, we're not supposed to be using our electronic devices, you know, within an hour or so before going to bed, but we are often tempted as a way to unwind or whatever. But if there's a book sitting right there, then it's just as easy to grab and open the book as it is to open the iPhone. If the book was downstairs in my office or on a shelf somewhere or in my briefcase, there'd be too much friction to go get it. But I see it, that's the trigger, it's right there, and I grab it. Coffee tables, because in the morning, what I call the anchor habit, so this is a secret number three, my anchor habit is a cup of coffee. You know, before I go to bed at night, I'm prepping that coffee maker, I look forward to that cup of coffee, I need that cup of coffee, and I grab the cup of coffee and I sit on the couch. Well, there's another book on that coffee table, so instead of spending 20 minutes reading Facebook or diving into work emails, I grab the book that's right there instead. So we talk about add friction for the bad habits, reduce friction for the good habits, and then tie a new habit to one of your already existing anchor habits. You know, this is how I started taking vitamins consistently. I had been on and off, but now I leave them out on the counter next to the coffee pot. I leave an empty water bottle next to the coffee pot. So in the morning, as I'm doing that coffee, I'm filling up my water bottle for the morning or half the morning. I'm gobbling down, you know, the vitamins, and then moving over to sit down, and there's always the book. And then the last secret, the fourth big secret is, and this is harder to do sometimes, but if you really want something to stick, you really need to start a new good habit that's going to be hard. You have to get an accountability partner. Now, it might be a family member that just yells at you if you haven't done your habit. Even better is someone who's doing it with you, someone that's going to get up and go jogging with you at 5 a.m. And this is because psychologically, we will break a promise to ourselves far easier, far faster than breaking a promise to someone else. So, you know, if I want to start jogging every morning at 5:30, well, when that alarm goes off at 5:25, you know I'm going to just do myself in and be like, ah, hit the snooze. Oh, I'll jog tonight instead. But if I know I hit snooze and my buddy Bill is going to be standing outside in front of my house waiting for me, well, I can't do that to him. So get yourself an accountability partner for all of your good habits. You know, join a book club, join a reading club, check in with someone online. How many pages did you read today? Monitor your social media usage. There's apps that will do that, or you can just open the battery usage on your iPhone in your settings, and it will tell you, like, by minute how many minutes you're using each app. And, you know, send your friend or your spouse a screenshot of your app usage every day and make it a challenge. You know, who can use Facebook the least instead of the most? Anyway, Robert, such a powerful question. Hopefully you found that helpful. Now, moving from productivity to entrepreneurship, I love all the variety of questions. I get this from Esan, who wrote, I'm a trainer and a coach for new insurance brokers. I have recently launched my own company and website. I'm confused about pricing. I offer two courses, one full day each, full broker training, blah, blah, blah. There are different schools of thought. Some people say set your prices higher to build value. Some say price it lower so it's affordable for more new brokers. In Selling the Invisible Book, a great book, by the way, the author recommends never to position your price in the middle. Okay, so first of all, congrats on being an entrepreneur and going out there and grabbing it. The world needs more entrepreneurs. And yes, so there's been a lot of studies, and conventional wisdom is, you know, there's at the basic level three ways to price your product or your service. You can be the highest priced offering, you can be the lowest, the cheapest offering, or you can be somewhere in the middle. And most research studies show that the middle pricing is the worst. You know, people either want to buy high quality and prestige and don't really think about money, so they go to the high one, or people are very cost conscious, you know, whether it's just because they have no money or whether that's just their psychology. So they tend to not care about quality, not care about features, not care about service, and they just buy cheap. There's some people that are somewhere in the middle, but that's the smallest group. So go high or go low. Now, having said that, when it comes to consulting, training, most entrepreneurs and most companies, to be honest, A more advanced way to think about this is a pricing ladder, or what I call the value ladder. Now, I've got an entire course on pricing in the LeadX Academy. So this is another plug for, you know, most affordable, you know, success tool you can get is a monthly subscription to the LeadX Academy at leadx.org. I've got an entire course on how to price your services. But the short version is visualize a ladder, and you want the cheap stuff on the bottom rungs of the ladder all the way to the really expensive stuff at the top. And so if you can imagine, as the pricing goes higher up on the ladder, the level of trust you need with your customers goes up as well. So a free offering could be an email newsletter. It could be blog posts. It could be articles, eBooks, white papers. So it doesn't cost anybody anything. They come to your website, they sign up, they give you an email, and they download your valuable information. Cost them zero, and there's little risk. So they didn't really need to trust you that much. They need to know you. Hopefully they'll start to like you. And it's like, well, I guess I'm trusting that, I don't know, this isn't total waste of my time. That's all the trust that they need. Now, what's one rung up the ladder from there? Well, I don't know. Maybe you're selling a $20 ebook. Maybe you're selling a $97 recorded webinar. What's up from there? Well, if they trust you and like your material that they've sampled at the lower levels, maybe now you're doing a $997 8-week video course with group coaching or something like that. So now you're at $1,000. Well, maybe at the $2,000 mark or the $5,000 mark, it's live workshops. They're going to come with 20 other people and spend a day or 2 days with you. You know, it's a bigger commitment of time, bigger commitment of money. They need to sort of trust that you're not going to rip them off, that you're going to show up, and that your stuff is going to be valuable. What's more expensive than that? Now you're getting into like mastermind groups at like 20 grand a year, 10 grand, 20 grand a year. Above that is what they call done for you services. So instead of teaching someone, I don't know, you know, how to set up their website for great marketing, you actually build websites for great marketing. These are done for you services. Now, this can apply to anything. When I think about a lot of my early businesses, I didn't understand what was going on at the time. I didn't have the model for it. But I'd be cold calling, you know, Pfizer Pharmaceuticals over and over again. And finally, my lucky break would be when I would, there's another strategy called productize your service, which is in the academy. But I would offer something that sounded very tangible, that was like $5,000, $10,000. Well, almost any corporate trainer can get that approved or sign off on that. And the risk is low. Okay, it's not a very high visibility project. It's not a whole lot of money, but it would get my foot in the door. And then I'd so blow them away, of course, they would come back and say, hey, Kevin, you know, we've got this 1-hour module on cardiovascular anatomy and physiology we need done. Would you be interested in bidding on that? Oh, sure. And now all of a sudden that's a $50,000 module or a $75,000 module. Then it's a product launch for a couple hundred thousand. Then it's a product launch and meeting for $1 million. And literally, and it would take me about 12 to 18 months to go from a $5,000 sale to a $1 million contract. And it's by, you know, you got to be good. You got to be unique. You need to be the only one who does what you do. Again, I teach that in the course. You need to, I always believe, price high. You know, you are the expert in the world. You are better than everybody else, and your pricing reflects that. And then you need to know, you know, the basics of how to work an account, you know, how to show up and wine and dine and get introduced to other people and bring value to people and start climbing up their organization chart. So you start selling to a trainer, then I'm selling to a training manager, then a training director, then a training VP, and then I'm doing courtesy calls on the CEO. So anyway, think about that value ladder and work your way up. All right, the last thing I've got, it isn't quite a question, but it was a very insightful comment from Zabinyak from the Czech Republic. And he writes, you always ask your guests about failures. I was thinking, what if I was asked such a question? I've had a business for 8 years and I could mention a couple failures, but I'd struggle to define where they've been. However, while listening to one of your guests, I realized that we may be failing without realizing it. My point is, if I want to learn from failure, I have to recognize it first. So I looked back on my day and reconsidered my actions and realized there were several small failures. I just hadn't noticed them. Examples could be that I could have been better prepared for a meeting, so I could have been more effective, or I should have paid more attention to the timing, or I should have allocated more time for my MIT, et cetera, et cetera. So now I'm trying a little harder on me and to reconsider the actions of each day to recognize fails that I can learn from. Zabinia, great email and great insights. And that's it. You know, it's funny. So I've had over 200 guests on the LeadX show. And usually when I ask that failure question, people laugh and be like, only one, or how much time do you have? There was one guest, I don't want to mention his name, who when I asked him, I always let them know before the show that the question's coming. He's like, huh, a failure. Well, I can't think of any. And I'm thinking, how can you be 40 years old running a business and not think of a single failure? It's our perspective, and we only grow from thinking about where could we have been better. And so this is exactly right. It's not to just say, when did I go out of business? When did I insult someone and get beat up at the bar? It isn't like massive failures. We can grow day by day, right? 1% better by looking at what we've done. Now, if you can do it daily, my hat's off. That's phenomenal. I try to reflect a little bit more weekly, monthly, and definitely I kind of run my life and my business in quarters, every 90 days, every 3 months. And so I really pause to think like, where did I fail on my goals in the previous quarter and why? And Zabinyak, it made me think of the book that came out earlier this year from billionaire hedge fund dude, Ray Dalio. And his book was called Principles. And it's a gigantic book that is pretty much impossible to get through. But it's interesting to flip through and understand. And his basic premise, I mean, he's really an extreme guide. So at his company, it's a radical culture of not just openness, but like fierce, like you tell me and grade me today how I did in that meeting. And it's, you know, even the direct reports criticizing the boss, and they all have these massive scorecards and all this stuff. And to me, it sounds like a little bit over the top and a little bit brutal, but this idea of analyzing your failures, that's what he said. Every time he lost money or had a bad year, or whatever, he would go back and look for what was the root cause. What was the root cause? Now, this I found very powerful, and I'm going to be doing more with this in the months or even years ahead. But I started thinking about some of my failures in the last year in business. And what was the root cause? And I started creating like a PowerPoint deck that only I see right now. Okay, I pulled this document up. I think it's so cool. Maybe I will have to share it out somehow. So I think about a failure or a repeated failure, and I think, what is the root problem? And then what is my new principle that I need to remind myself of all the time? So for example, I'm seeing here, root problem, Kevin is an optimist. My new principle, red team, major decisions and initiatives. Ask, if this goes wrong, why and how will it go wrong? What will the cost be? Now, red team, I'm using as a verb. That means like, even if you think something's a good idea, flip it around and try to attack that idea. Where is it going to fail, or what's the problem with it? And so, you know, what happens is I often go all in with a freelancer, with a contractor, with a partner, with a new initiative. And I'm just such an optimist, and probably think I'm the smartest guy in the room as well, that I just assume it's going to work out. And often it doesn't. And so I need to realize, like, before I rush forward or before I make a major partnership, I need to pause and say, all right, now let's assume it's 6 months down the road and this blew up in a bad way. What would cause it to blow up in a bad way? And, you know, here's another one where root problem, Kevin describes goals vaguely. My principle, make leadership intent specific. Describe budget, time, and quality measurably. And what I was finding is that quite often my freelancers let me down. I think I'm being really clear. I think, again, everything's going to work out just fine. And then I think they've missed a deadline or not delivered what they said they would deliver, etc. But they come back and think they have. So I realize, like, I might say, hey, we need to be able to launch this app on this date to our target audience. And I think that's pretty specific. But then, you know, I need to realize, what does that mean? Like, with bugs or without bugs? All the modules or some of the modules? Launch it on the iPhone or the iPhone and an Android device? Like, there's a whole nother layer of detail that I rarely get into that I need to get in more more to. I'm scrolling through as this. Root problem: Kevin doesn't hold people accountable. Specify performance penalties is the principal, guarantees or refunds. So you can see this repeated thing where a lot of people steal my money and don't deliver. And it's true. Like, this is a big weakness of mine, is I don't hold people accountable. Let's see. Root problem: Kevin assumes people understand his verbal instructions. Principal: ask what they heard and or, if important, put it in writing. Now, this is a bigger problem on my team. So if I'm talking to someone out loud on my team, they're nodding, they're saying yes, they're scribbling some things, I think they get it. And then they don't do what I'm expecting them to do. And when I ask them about it, what they heard or what they thought I wanted was not what I thought I communicated. Now, if I had done a check and said, hey, what did you just hear me say? Or what do you think you're delivering next week? We could verbally check it right then and there. Or I could just ask them, hey, can you push back the meeting notes and, you know, highlight the action items. Anyway, so didn't mean to go quite on that long of a rant, but dang, that was such an insightful thing that we will only get better when we look for and find our areas to get better, our micro failures. And then in my case, I'm trying to come up with, like, what are the worst ones? What are the repeatable patterns? And what's a principle that I can remind myself with? Okay, last thing, I want to just give a big thanks to NASA and SpaceX, because they invited me and about, 25 other, like, we're not journalists, like just social media people, I guess online influencers they were looking for. You know, we spent 2 days with at the Kennedy Space Center down outside of Orlando and down in Florida, and it was mind-blowing. Now, I mean, I like science, and I grew up loving Star Trek and, of course, Star Wars and all that, but I'm not a huge space geek, so I kind of felt like the opportunity was wasted. But I think it's part of their attempt to just get more uneducated people educated about science. And, you know, basically what I was down there for is, you know, above the Earth right now is the International Space Station. And my facts are going to be a little bit wrong, but basically it's huge. It's like the size of a football field, circling the globe like 12 times a day. And there's six humans up there running all kinds of experiments. And the humans get swapped out every now and then, but more frequently they need to shoot rockets up to resupply it with both food and things like that, that the astronauts need, but then also new science experiments. So what was going to be, what I saw was a Falcon 9 rocket, which was made by Elon Musk's company, SpaceX. The Falcon 9 rocket launches a capsule, and they call that the Dragon capsule, up to the space station. And then when the Dragon capsule kind of navigates pretty close to the space station, going at, you know, a bazillion miles an hour, and then the astronauts use a robot arm to grab the capsule, bring it in, and then get their goodies. So the day before the launch, you know, we went to all the press briefings on what was on the capsule. You know, there was a lot of cool stuff. I mean, there's an experiment that's going to that can shoot photographs in real time of the Earth as it spins over and can see the hot spots in farmland and forests and things. And it can be used to tell farmers, like, how to direct the watering of their crops, all this kind of crazy stuff. There's all sorts of, like, cancer curing experiments going on that I could not understand what the scientists were saying, but go curing cancer. Well, I'm rooting for you. And then for me, the coolest thing was this thing called Simon, C-I-M-O-N. It's a German group. It's basically the first AI robot, AI chatbot that's in space. And it's like, it's a white globe about the size of a beach ball. And because there's, you know, no gravity, low gravity, it floats. And then they've got it configured with these little propellers so that when the astronaut calls out to Simon, it can float itself over to the astronaut and then have a conversation with the astronaut. They are using, and here's where I'm excited, IBM Watson. That's the same technology we are using to power Coach Amanda, the world's first executive coach built by IBM Watson, built with IBM Watson. Come on, not by IBM Watson. It's by LeadX. So this is really cool. You know, this whole idea of conversational learning, you're going to hear me talking more and more about it, having these little robots, they can be in your phone or they can be a physical device, navigate to talk to you. You know, that was really, really cool. We toured the veggie lab. They're doing a lot of work to figure out how to grow things like lettuce up in space. And partly for just variety and having, you know, good food that astronauts want to eat rather than all the freeze-dried stuff. But it's mainly to give them nutrients, you know, vitamins that they need. And they're all, everybody's working on this vision to get to Mars. So when we go to Mars, it's going to take about, the journey is about 6 to 8 months to get from Earth to Mars. And then they say we're going to quote unquote camp on Mars probably for 3 to 6 months. Then we need to spend another 6 to 8 months flying back from Mars to Earth. And how do you feed astronauts for that long a period of time? And I said, well, you know, can't you just send some vitamins? You know, my I've got a pretty good vegan protein shake. You want the recipe, you know? And they said the problem is that vitamins degrade. So when you're talking about a 2-year journey, a 3-year journey, supplements won't cut it. You need to be able to grow your own food to get like the vitamin C and all that other stuff. So I thought that was interesting. Also, we're going to have enough fuel to land on Mars, but then we're going to be out of fuel. How do we get fuel for the rocket ship to come back from Mars? And they figured out that if they can mine on Mars, water, there is water on Mars, and some of the elements in the Mars soil, they can combine them and make hydrogen fuel or something like that. Again, I'm not the science guy. I skipped chemistry in high school. True story. So kids, go take your chemistry class. It's going to be important. So that was another lab where they'd recreated like the Marsscape, and they were experimenting with different robots that could mine the dirt and then working on how to turn the dirt with water into fuel. And you know how hard it would be to ship all kinds of building materials to build a base on Mars. Well, instead of shipping material there, it's so expensive, you know, to shoot all these rockets out. They want to do what we did in the old days, like take dirt and water and make like bricks out of this so we can build really strong material. And they figured out a recipe where they've got this giant 3D printer that turns the Mars soil into cement blocks, kind of like Lego blocks, but it's as strong as cement. So they've made some progress, but it's really slow. I think they can make like, I don't know what, 3 blocks an hour or a day or whatever. They said they need to go like 100 times faster than that. So it was just really fascinating stuff. They're just, everybody's talking, they're single focus. Everybody's talking about the big, hairy, audacious goal, get to Mars and back. And there, we would ask questions about like, well, what happens when your robot gets a rock stuck in its claw and it can't dig the dirt anymore? And they would say things like, yeah, we anticipate that's going to be a problem. We're going to have to solve that. And unlike most people who it's like, well, that's never going to work. It's going to get stuck in the rocks. Or what if a rock breaks it? I ain't going to Mars. Like they were just nonchalant. Like we would ask all these people like, yep, that's a big problem. We're going to have to solve it. Yeah, that's a problem. Someone's going to have to solve that. Yep, we're working on it. Hopefully we can solve it. It was just, you know, again, failure, problem. It's just something we're going to have to learn how to do. Hey, how are you going to use your 3D printer to go from making 6 bricks an hour to 600? I don't know, but we're working on it. You know, it was just an interesting vibe, very cool vibe there. Hey, if you want to see pictures or some videos from my NASA trip, I was putting those up on my social media stuff, mainly on my Instagram story, which is gone, but I've got some Instagram photos there too. I'm Kevin Author at Instagram. I was doing a little bit on Twitter. I'm at Cruz, K-R-U-S-E on Twitter. And of course, go to kevincruz.com to subscribe to my newsletter, leadx.org to subscribe to that newsletter, including free courses of the day, and forbes.com for my articles. On that note, friends, have an amazing weekend. Remember, you are always leading. How are you going to lead today?